just basically out there manipulating stuff made out of plastic. I mean, whether it's taking it out of a plastic package or fixing something that's made out of plastic or getting some technological marvel to work for you, the potential is that you could be liberated from that if plastic products were made to really last as long as plastic lasts. That's a material that lasts forever. It's ridiculous. It's a central contradiction of our time that we have to have a throwaway society with a product that lasts forever. Forever.
Hello, y'all. This is Scott Merrick from the Vanderbilt University Center for Science Outreach, and I want to thank you for downloading this episode of Snacks for the Brain. We're truly grateful for your interest in what we're doing to bring the joy of research and discovery to K-12 students and teachers the whole world over. If you're not in either of these categories, maybe you're just an interesting person who's interested in the world. In any case, welcome. Bi-weekly or so, we'll share some fun, independent, pod-safe music. We'll interview working research scientists, students, or leading proponents of educational change, and we'll toss in an occasional sound-seeing tour or computer tip.
We'll be right here
whenever you need us. At blogs.vanderbilt.edu/S4TheB and at the CSO website at scienceoutreach.org, sharing good brain munchies with you. So, listen up. Let's get right down to it with episode number
64
of Snack for the Brain. Charles Moore is a sailboat captain who just last week was featured on National Public Radio's All Things Considered. As the captain of a research vessel investigating what has come to be called the garbage patch of the Pacific Ocean, this huge area, about the size of the state of Texas, is crowded with debris from our wasteful civilization, one which, according to Captain Moore, is pretty much doomed to strangle its own oceans by its profit-motivated culture, in which our most prevalent products are meant to be used once and thrown away. These find their way to just below the surface of the ocean, where they accumulate, float in suspension, and threaten the habitats of increasingly large numbers of living species. It is noted that debris outweighs living plankton in the area by a factor of about 6. Mindfully.org goes on to note that the levels of plastic particulates in the Pacific Ocean have at least tripled in the last 10 years, and a tenfold increase in the next decade is not unreasonable. Then, 60 times more plastic than plankton will float on its surface. According to the Institute for Figurings website, a pretty cool place in its own right, a study by the United Nations Environmental Program estimates that in this region there are 46,000 floating pieces of plastic for every square mile of ocean, and the trash now circulates to a depth of 30 meters. October 29th, students at the School for Science and Math at Vanderbilt had the privilege of video conferencing with Captain Moore and hearing him share his firsthand experience with the horror that is our world's vast and newly discovered unplanned pit of poisons. Before we hear excerpts from this fantastic interaction, I invite you to enjoy this lovely piece of work from Manitoba's Weird Sisters, that's W-Y-R-D, from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. It's called When Ship's Head Sails.
I have never looked upon this landscape before. Somehow it feels familiar. Deep down inside, I can taste the wind of this country on my lips, though I've never woken up under her skies. If I see an old love in a stranger's face, tell me what kind of fate has brought us to this place. Oh, you can trust me with your secrets. You can trust me with your pain. And I can build a little shrine where we both can go to pray. For there's something about your beauty that reminds me of long ago, when ships had sails. I had never walked in desert afternoon, though I know I would recognize its searing heat. For I felt my face are burning with the same kind of shame when I couldn't take my eyes off from my feet. But there's no shame in this kind of fear. Come on, let us bless the faith.
These remote parts of the ocean is because we get there sailing. If we had to motor the whole way, it would require so much fuel that it would be prohibitive. So we have to look for wind, and late summer, typically that's the calmest time of the year in the North Pacific. So it's practically always blowing strong off San Francisco, but when we got up off of San Francisco, it was still quite calm. So we ended up using a lot of fuel just getting away from the coast. We eventually picked up some wind and got out to this area we call the garbage patch, where we started sampling and collecting manta trawls, which is a net that has wings like a manta ray and a big wide mouth, and it has a net with a mesh that's a third of a millimeter designed to catch zooplankton. And we pull up samples like this one on the table here that has a mixture of plastic and plankton in it, and then we assess it. I don't know. Try to show it a little bit closer. Can you guys see that?
Yes.
You see there's stuff floating on the top of it?
Yes.
Okay, that's some packing band, like the kind of band you find around a cardboard box to hold it together. And there's some plastic pellets in there and fragments of plastic mixed in with zooplankton. This is a hard hat that's been floating around out in the ocean for a long time because it's got the rim chipped away. But you can still tell pretty clearly that's what it is, right? You can see there's a lot of growth on it. So that's the kind of stuff we found out there. And then we were asked to go to a special area by a scientist at the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, Dave Foley, who studies where debris accumulates in the ocean with the object of picking some of it up. The derelict fishing nets are causing a big problem for the monk seal, which is a very endangered species of seal, the only really tropical seal in the world. And its habitat is threatened by these nets that are derelict nets that fishermen lose. And they continue to float around and catch fish and catch seals and catch turtles. And they grow. The ocean actually knits them together. These brings sort of like things together. The ocean currents tend to concentrate things together that are of a similar nature. And these big balls of net can be way up over a ton. And when they hit the reef in Hawaii, they destroy the coral and they cause a big problem. So Dave Foley had a theory proposed to him that these nets accumulate with other debris in areas where there are phytoplankton blooms. Have you guys studied plankton? You know what phytoplankton is?
Yes.
Okay. Well, this particular type of phytoplankton he calls the jumbo jet of phytoplankton. Most phytoplankton is very tiny and microscopic. This one's actually a millimeter, so you can see it with the naked eye. And the theory was that this particular type of phytoplankton blooms where the debris concentrates. And if you think about it, that might make sense because what would cause a phytoplankton bloom? An accumulation of nutrients, right? And an accumulation of nutrients might be because ocean currents brought nutrients together in a certain area, and those same currents might conceivably bring debris to the same locations. And so they had evidence from a satellite that the phytoplankton were blooming in a certain area north of Hawaii. And so we sailed our boat to that area to take samples of water for Dave that he could then analyze for that species of phytoplankton. We also noticed as we sailed to that area that we got the highest concentrations of debris in our trawls. So it's a possibility that this is true. It won't know until his samples are analyzed, and we just recently sent them off to his experts in identifying phytoplankton at a lab on the mainland. So anyhow, after we completed that sampling, we had used up most of our fuel. We were in a hurry to get to Hawaii, so we were looking for wind, so we motored out of the gyre. These gyres, these concentration areas, these garbage patches are areas of low wind. So stuff close to the surface. They're centers of high pressure systems, and typically the wind is low there. So we had to motor for a day to get out of that, but once we got out of it, we picked up some strong winds, blowing about 20 knots, and our boat will sail about half the wind speed, so we're making about 10 knots, which means do between 9 and 10, you're going to make 200 miles in a day. So for 3 or 4 days, we made 200 miles every day, and that brought us down to the Big Island of Hawaii, where we are now in Hilo, Hawaii, in a little bay behind a cruise ship terminal called Radio Bay. So that's an introduction to the voyage.
Great. So can we ask you some questions now that we came up with while watching the synthetic sea video?
Okie dokie.
So does anybody have any questions for Dr.
Kathy? When I get older, podcasting still, any day now, friend, will you still be learning and be entertained by the latest snacks for the brain? Send me a comment, drop me a line, I promise I won't bore. Will you still need me, RSS feed me, when I'm 64? Will you still need me, RSS feed me,
When I'm 16.
Don't be shy. Okay, Razan.
You know the plastic turtles that you were talking about?
Yeah. Okay. We're trying to get nurdles as a new word in the dictionary. It may become part of the Oxford English Language Dictionary. We have to demonstrate that it's been used for 4 years in a consistent meaning, and we think we have enough data to prove that. So it may become a legitimate word. So it's quite okay to use the word nurdle to describe a pre-production plastic pellet.
And I was asking, who puts the nurdles in the ocean?
Well, the plastic industry does. It's a series, you know, there are the big companies like Dow that make the nurdles, and then they distribute them to thousands of processors. I mean, every plastic object has its own type of mold, and these molds aren't all accumulated in one giant factory. They're tiny little factories. One's going to make your desk, one's going to make your chair, one's going to make your Venetian blinds, another one's going to make your plastic bottle. As a matter of fact, the factories that make the plastic bottles don't make the caps for the bottle because they're a different kind of plastic. There's one factory, Alcoa, down in Ensenada, Baja California, that just makes caps for all the bottle companies around the world. So every type of plastic object has its own little factory. Well, the way, how do they get the material, these nurdles there? Well, they get them in rail cars for the most part, and the rail cars have little valves on the bottom of them that they put a hose in and suck them out with a vacuum system. And when they make and break those connections, they spill the nurdles on the ground. And these nurdles, being lightweight and round and real roly-poly, they roll down the storm drain system into the rivers and out the rivers into the ocean. And that way they become part of the ocean current system and are eventually accumulated and actually, surprisingly, constitute by count about 10% of all the plastic we find on beaches and in the ocean is these little plastic pellets, these nurdles, which are released by the plastic industry. The only time a consumer might ever release nurdles would be if you bought a stuffed animal or one of those chairs that is just a big bag that you can sit in, you know, that are stuffed with these nurdles. Then if you split that open and drop them, you could get some in the environment. But basically, they mostly all come from industry.
And
you have a question?
Is there anything being done to solve the plastic problem?
Well, I think what's being done is at the very initial stages. It's sort of like, you know, tobacco in the 1960s. If you walked into the doctor's office in 1960 with lung cancer, they didn't ask you if you smoked. No one had made that connection yet. And some of the problems that plastic is causing, beyond just littering the environment, there are health concerns as well with some of the chemicals in plastics, and those are just beginning to be known. So we really don't have a good handle on the problems plastic are causing, and because of that, we don't have really high-level efforts to deal with them. The efforts out there now are pretty much timid, kind of, you know, half-baked solutions, like just getting one part of the plastic that's entering the ocean out, like, for instance, the bottles, and putting a deposit on the bottles, which, you know, there's no deposit on the cap. I mean, the cap is not recyclable, only the bottle is recyclable. So just to have a bottle bill doesn't mean you have a bottle cap bill. So that's why I say it's really not dealing with the problem in any comprehensive way. I think what will have to happen is that each industry that makes the plastic will have to have some way to take it back and reuse it, because it's not possible for consumers and governments to deal with the litter. It's just too expensive. The people that make it have to take it back, and that we're a long way from getting producer responsibility.
Now, how can we get all the plastic that's in the ocean right now out of the ocean?
We can't. It's a wrong-headed concept to think that we can do anything about it. We can't. The only thing governments are even considering is trying to get some of these large nets out. But the material is dispersed fairly evenly over more area than all the landmass of the Earth combined. I mean, it would be like asking the question, how can we clean up every square inch of land times three? you know, then having done that, how can we do it down to a depth of 2 miles? Because the average depth of the ocean is 2 miles. Litter on the surface of the earth, on land, you know, you're talking about something that's totally a surface phenomenon. When you pick up litter in the beach, or you pick up litter in the parking lot, or you pick up litter around your school, you're dealing with a surface phenomenon. These plastic particles that have invaded the ocean are thoroughly mixed in. I mean, we found them down to a depth of 100 meters. We're talking a situation in which there's no possible way to take it out of the ocean. All we can do is stop putting it in, and the ocean will eventually spit it out. The ocean collects things, knits them together, and spits them out on a regular basis. But it can't spit them all out if we keep putting them in. So the answer to your question is, we have to stop putting plastic in the ocean and let the ocean spit it out over time.
Aziza, and then you ask.
Is anybody taking any kind of action to make recycling mandatory in some countries?
I would say that all the efforts I know about are pretty much voluntary. In terms of mandatory recycling, I'm not familiar with any law that would require a certain type of recycling. There are programs in which the Green Dot program in Europe, in which the companies that make the material do have to take them back, and in a sense that's mandatory. They have to, but it's sort of like the carbon trading thing. They let the big polluters pollute if some other guy does a good job. So it's like, if somebody, you know, collects a lot of plastic, then some company that can't collect the plastic gets to not collect it. So it's a situation where they set up kind of credits for plastic collection. So, yeah, as I say, considering the amount of plastic and how ubiquitous it is in our lives and how it's everywhere and we use it every day, the chance that we can stop it from entering the ocean is remote at the present time. I mean, just think about the number of plastic components in your life, and think about what you have to do to keep them going. I mean, here's a material that lasts virtually forever, and we're using it in throwaway products. What we've developed, rather than a society in which we have products that last a long time and require little maintenance, we've created a society of constant maintenance. Just, you know, in your own life, these things, all these gadgets you've got, they don't work that well for that long. There's always something you got to do to them. I mean, every time you boot up your computer, it tells you you've got to upgrade or do something, some kind of maintenance. So rather than liberate you from constant toil, constant maintenance, constant upgrades, constant buying of new products, plastic is creating a situation in which you are locked in to a rat race of little tiny tasks that take all your time, take you away from yourself. You have no real time to think about you and what you want to do. You're just basically out there manipulating stuff made out of plastic. I mean, whether it's taking it out of a plastic package or fixing something that's made out of plastic or getting some technological marvel to work for you, you have no time other than that. But the potential is that you could be liberated from that if plastic products were made to really last as long as plastic lasts. We're making plastic products that don't last. That's a material that lasts forever. It's ridiculous. It's a central contradiction of our time that we have to have a throwaway society with a product that lasts forever.
Isaiah?
Okay. So, since you know that we will never be able to get rid of all the plastic in the ocean, what is like the ultimate goal of your research?
I think it's to bring awareness of the issue so that we do create a change in society and change the trajectory of our economic system so that instead of constant growth, you know, really the paradigm of constant growth is what's causing us to make a throwaway product out of a product that lasts forever. It's an economic paradigm that says you're doing great if your company's growing, No matter if the products you're making are being consumed and used in a matter of seconds, like the wrapper on all these products that you have to unwrap to get at, that's a product that lasts for just a second. It's you buy the product, you tear off the wrapper, throw half of it in the parking lot, half of it in the wastebasket, half of it on the floor, and that product is economically viable. That's something that the guy has to make. He's got to charge money for making it, and then he's got to make another one. And every time you buy that product, every time you unwrap that piece of candy, that's the guy that made a plastic wrapper that's making money off the deal. So, you know, the economy itself has to change. I think the ultimate goal of my research and my effort in this is to make people see that the economy that requires a paradigm, it's the same thing as a cancer cell, something that grows unlimited and grows every which way. That's the paradigm for our economy. My goal is to say, look, if that's going to be your goal, we haven't got a chance to clean up the ocean, we haven't got a chance to clean up the world, we haven't got a chance to deal with the umpteen different assaults on our health and on the health of the environment, if we've got this paradigm of constant growth, because sickly people are better for the healthcare system if it's a money-driven system. A money-driven healthcare system loves sick people. It doesn't love healthy people. A money-driven system loves lousy drivers that get in wrecks because it makes the economy grow. A safe driver that takes care of his car and never goes to the mechanic and never has a wreck, that's lousy for the economy. So there's a whole host of reasons why the economic system has to change. And, you know, I'm just a person that has come to the conclusion that there's a big change needed to do all these little changes that we'd all like to see done.
Wow. If that's not thought food for these high school freshmen, I don't know what is. They had just spent the morning dissecting seabird boluses.
Is that the plural of bolus?
To discover how much plastic waste the birds had ingested recently.
How about a tech tip that suggests that snacking on YouTube video might be harmful to your computer?
Listen up to... From Dr. T by way of completelyfreesoftware.com's weekly newsletter. Online videos may be virus conduits by Greg Bluestein, AP posted on 2 October in Atlanta, Georgia. Online videos aren't just for bloopers and rants. Some might also be conduits for malicious code that can affect your computer. As anti-spam technology improves, hackers are finding new vehicles to deliver their malicious code, and some could be embedded in online video players, according to a report on internet threats released Tuesday by the Georgia Tech Information Security Center as it holds its annual summit. The summit is gathering more than 300 scholars and security experts to discuss emerging threats for 2008 and their countermeasures. Among their biggest foes are the ever-changing vehicles that hackers use to deliver malware, which can silently install viruses, probe for confidential info, or even hijack a computer. Just as we see an evolution in messaging, we also see an evolution in threats, said Chris Rouland, the chief technology officer for IBM Corporation's Internet Security Systems Unit and a member of the group that helped draft the report. As companies have gotten better blocking emails, we see people move to more creative techniques. With computer users getting wiser to email scams, malicious hackers are looking for sneakier ways to spread the codes. Over the past few years, hackers have moved from sending their spam and text-based messages to more devious means, embedding them in images or disguised as portable document format or PDF files. The next logical step seems to be the media players, Rouland said. There have only been a few cases of video-related hacking so far. One worm discovered in November 2006 launches a corrupt website without prompting after a user opens a media file in a player. Another program silently installs spyware when a video file is opened. Attackers have also tried to spread fake video links via postings on YouTube. That reflects the lowered guard many computer users would have on such popular forums. People are accustomed to not clicking on messages from banks, but they all want to see videos from YouTube, Rouland said. Another soft spot involves social networking sites, blogs, and wikis. These community-focused sites, which are driving the next generation of web applications, are also becoming one of the juiciest targets for malicious hackers. Computers surfing the sites silently communicate with a web application in the background, but hackers sometimes secretly embed malicious code when they edit the open sites, and a web browser will unknowingly execute the code. These chinks in the armor could let hackers steal private data, hijack web transactions, or spy on users. Tuesday's forum gathers experts from around the globe to try to get ahead of emerging threats rather than having to chase them, said Mustaq Ahmad, director of the Georgia Tech Center. They are expected to discuss new countermeasures, including tighter validation standards and programs that analyze malicious code. Ahmad also hopes the summit will be a launching pad of sorts for an informal network of security-minded programmers. And that's it for episode number 64 of Snacks for the Brain.
Snacks for the Brain is brought to you by the fine folks at the Vanderbilt Center for Science Outreach, connecting working research scientists with K-12 students worldwide. Check out the website at scienceoutreach.org.
Leading you out with another sailing-themed song from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. This time it's Sail Away from Now Is Now, an acoustic folk rock trio based out of the state of Maine. See ya!
See ya! See ya! A form I lived in, a form of hypocrisy, singing songs from inside of me. Take their time, come to me. Ideas which connect us, ideas used against us, once thought to enhance us, divide us, leave me be. Time, save your trouble, sets ablaze what you thought could not burn. Thoughts are not real as they seem. Time you leave me. Sail away, take no reason. Sail away, won't you leave here today? Thoughts to stay, put an end within seasons. Reason it out, reason it out all your needs. Think twice and just be. Just a man, man in transition, nowhere destination, complacent as I sing. Sing a song, leave it breathless. Sing a song, leave it helpless. What you thought could not burn. Thoughts are not real as they are.